All righty, let's get started. Welcome to everybody who's joined us today. Today's webinar, The Do's and Don'ts for Financial Advisors When Talking to Investors, is sponsored by the Institute for the Fiduciary Standard. The Institute is really the only completely independent organization dedicated to benefiting investors by advancing understandable and verifiable fiduciary practices as standard operating procedure for anybody who gives financial advice. Advisors can join our efforts. We invite you to visit the fiduciaryinstitute.org to see our 12 best practices for fiduciary advisors. This conference is one of many events held by the Institute during its month-long Fiduciary September initiative, which is designed to call attention to the importance of fiduciary advice in the investment industry. I hope our talk will help advisors better understand investors' perspective on seeking financial advice. And of course, there may be some investors listening in today too. I hope it will help them find their voice with advisors and insist on practices that are in their best interests. I think Jane, Terry, and I all have seen the damaging effects of financial advice that is not in an investor's best interest, so I think we have a united front here in the importance of this topic. We'll be recording today's conversation, and if you'd like to listen again or would like to share it with friends and family, the audio will be posted in the blog area at campaignforinvestors.org. Also, towards the end of our conversation today, Jane and Terry will be taking questions. Please email those questions to info@campaignforinvestors.org. My name is Mary Malguar. I am the principal organizer of the Campaign for Investors and an advisor to the Institute for the Fiduciary Standard. I spent 30 years guiding individuals and families on saving, investing, and planning for retirement. I also helped to launch the National Association of Personal Financial Advisors, which is a professional association for fee-only financial planners. I am currently retired and spend time assisting the Institute and the Campaign for Investors. So today, I am so delighted to have Jane Bryant Quinn and Terry Savage with me. Both are nationally recognized experts on personal finance and have devoted their entire career to helping investors make good financial decisions. Each has extensive experience in helping investors negotiate the financial industry. So let me take a minute to highlight just a couple of their many accomplishments. Terry Savage writes and blogs on personal finance for the Huffington Post. She is a frequent guest on television and radio shows, including CNN, CBS, and Oprah. Terry has two books on personal finance, The Savage Truth on Money and The Savage Number, How Much Money Do You Really Need to Retire? You can read Terry's columns as well as post questions and comments at her website, terrysavage.com, and that's T-E-R-R-Y, savage.com. Jane Bryant Quinn addresses matters of top concern to everyone, including investor protection, health insurance, Social Security, and the future of retirement accounts. She currently writes a column every month for the AARP Monthly Bulletin. I just got mine. And AARP.com on issues affecting people in midlife and retirement. Jane has written several books on personal finance, including Making the Most of Your Money, which has been in print since 1991. Her latest book, How to Make Your Money Last, The Indispensable Retirement Guide, was published in 2016. So I could go on and on about both of you, but I think it's important for our listeners to know that you have talked with clients of advisors for many, many years and perhaps understand their concerns about financial advice better than anyone else. So thank you for sharing your wisdom with us today. So welcome, Jane and Terry.
Thank you.
So let's get started. It's been 8 years since the Great Recession. The majority of Americans suffered a very large amount, as a result of bad behavior on Wall Street. Jane, what is your sense of how investors in particular feel now? Could you take their temperature for us?
You know, Mary, when you speak to them, they are still spooked. They think a lot about the two bad bear markets we had at the end of the last century. But they are still along for the ride because they've been doing so well in recent years. But what I find ironic is that they are in the market, but they, because they're worried, they are looking for so-called safe investments, and that is making them take more risks. For example, they're looking at high dividend stocks without thinking of whether the dividend as a percent of earnings is high because earnings are going down. They're looking at high yield bonds. High yield bond prices have been driven way up. So they think they are going into safety investments, but they are taking, I think, more risks than they realize. And also by congregating in dividend stocks, because, again, that seems the safest, they are not diversifying their investments. So they're focused in utilities and consumer staples and whatnot that pay dividends. But if you remember in 2006, the big dividend stocks were all banks, and you know what happened to those. Whereas if they were broadly invested in the market, you know, they'd have growth stocks, they'd have small stocks along with dividend stocks. So I find them very happy with the way things are going now, but their concern, I think, is leading them into riskier investments than they realize.
Yeah, so they're chasing income here.
Chasing income.
And don't forget to add to that list a craze that I've been hearing more and more about it and trying to debunk. There's a product that is being distributed. They are kind of called bridge loans or individual crowdsourced loans to real estate projects that are touted as, quote, safe. And in 1 year, the bridge loan will be taken out, and they will get their ultimate financing. And in the meantime, you can earn so much more money than in a bank, and none of them have failed yet. Well, sure, not in this cycle. I mean, there's plenty of liquidity around. There are a lot of people, and I always say that you're not getting paid enough for the risk in some of the products that are being offered out there to individual investors who, as you said, and I see it too, are all searching for higher yields because they thought they'd live on their interest, and they haven't learned that they might have to dig into their principal just to stay safe.
Yeah, this all, you know, speaks to me about the need for financial advisors in their life. So can we drill down just a little bit and really focus specifically on, are investors looking for help from financial advisors? Terry, when do they usually want help? And how do they begin this process?
I think that's what Campaign for Investors is all about. Jane and I write about this. All of a sudden, we have a whole new group of people who realize they better seek advice as the baby boomers retire in droves with 401k accounts that they never thought they'd have that kind of money, but by virtue of the market, especially these last 8 years, they really have a pool of assets. They are looking around and saying, now what do I do? And unfortunately, too many of them are greeted with salespeople who have a very great idea of what they could do to make the salesperson rich and not necessarily to the benefit first of the individual or the person who's seeking advice. So all you wonderful advisors who found Campaign for Investors and are willing to come and be the people who will act as trusted fiduciary advisors, you are in greater demand today than at any time because people have the money and they have to make the decisions.
Yeah, we're going to talk about – go ahead, Jane.
I was saying, when people are looking for financial advisors, especially, as Terry points out, getting out of their 401ks, where you've been basically investing in a protected environment where there's a limited number of mutual funds are offered and you can't go too badly wrong, and then suddenly you leave this environment and all the wolves are out there and you have no idea how to deal with them. And very often people do something like ask their friends, and their friends might say, oh, I have this great broker, he's beating the market all the time. Well, he's not, but and they don't know it. So the question really is, where do you go about finding an investor that you can, advisor that you can trust? And a couple of suggestions, one on the website of the Institute for the Fiduciary Standard, all of the advisors who are currently supporting the work of the Institute are listed there, so I'd say that's a pretty good start. Also, the organization you helped start, Mary, the National Association of Personal Financial Advisors, NAPFA, NAPFA.org, is another place to go to start looking for advisors who are fee-only advisors, they are fiduciaries, and I think those are two places that you should look that are probably a whole lot safer than asking your friends.
So if we have advisors who are concerned with how do investors begin the process of seeking help, how can an advisor get into that that process? How can they put themselves in front of investors, best put themselves in front of the investor who is looking for help? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Go ahead, Jane. I'm sorry, I'm not hearing you very well. I'm not sure something has happened with the wire, but let me do my best. First, I've already mentioned the business of looking at the site for the National Association of Personal Financial Advisors and looking at the Institute for the Fiduciary Standards site, which is a place where individuals can go themselves. For advisors to try to put themselves in front of individuals is much more difficult because you don't unless you have because you spread much more by word of mouth. And if people could think about putting fiduciary advisors into their search engine and helping to find people that way, that might be a start. But some advisors are working with companies, and they can go and give talks to the companies. Unfortunately, a lot of those are brokers or insurance agents. They are not, you know, fiduciary, fee-only financial advisors. So I think in many ways that the advisors are sort of leaving the field to the people who are giving the worst advice rather than people who are giving the best advice, because it seems it spreads by word of mouth more than active participation by advisors in putting themselves forward.
That's a very good point. I think one of the things, you know, right now there's just a world of confusion. We have raised this word fiduciary, and 2-3 years ago, most people in the ordinary investors had never even heard of it. But now we know what it means. It means that you fully disclose all fees and commissions and so forth, and that you put your client's interest ahead of your own. I can't think of a better advertising technique, as Jane just mentioned, than taking out an ad saying, forget the debate, we are fiduciaries, here's what it means, we put your interest first, et cetera. I think that is exactly what people are looking for. They don't know how to ask if someone's a fiduciary. They're embarrassed to say they don't understand it. So the financial advisor can proudly hold out that flag and say, this is what we do. Your first meeting with us is at no charge. We only charge this, or this is how we charge. If you can do that, I think you have a big head start, because now investors are aware, individuals are aware that they need this kind of advice. And I might add one more thing. Individuals aren't really aware of what a financial planner does, or all of what a financial planner does. Lately, because they are rolling out of their retirement plans and thinking about what will I do with the money, they're falling into the category of asking for investment advice without realizing there's a much bigger surround, my estate plan, my tax issues, my withdrawal plan. Those are all kinds of things that I think you'd want to advertise to be part of a well-rounded financial planning service that is a fiduciary service. And the first person that does that in a big way in Chicago or in New York or anywhere else gets on the local TV and says, before I start talking about the markets, I want you to know this is who I am, a fiduciary. The trust bank is waiting to be tapped by so many individuals.
I couldn't agree more with the fact that this has to be done. I am very concerned about what is happening with the fiduciary standard and how people are defining the fiduciary standard. As everyone here knows, there was a pretty strong standard for retirement accounts put out by the Obama administration's Department of Labor, and now the Trump administration is in the process of presumably watering it down. And what we are seeing, and this is what advisors are going to be challenged with, we're seeing what I call true fiduciaries and fake fiduciaries. And a true fiduciary is what does all the things that Terry just talked about. You know, they disclose fees, they have zero or minor conflicts of interest, they disclose them, you know, they have a duty of loyalty and care, and they advertise that. However, the Securities and Exchange Commission, which does not yet have a fiduciary standard of its own, their staff has said often and in public that they don't see the difference between putting your client's interest first, which is the true fiduciary standard, and simply disclosing conflicts of interest. So basically, from the SEC point of view, if you have a bunch of conflicts and they're in the advisory agreement that you sign with a client and you disclose them and the client buys those on your recommendation and they're complex and they're high cost and they really don't know what they're doing, but it was disclosed, you have personally decided that those products must be in your best interest, and that's okay. So when people are now, advisors who are true fiduciaries are working in muddy waters where big investment houses, and I've seen them, and I know you have, Mary, and you have, Terry, you've seen these advisory accounts that people sign, and you go look under the paragraph conflicts of interest, and there's a whole list of products in which the firm has an interest themselves, and they're trying to sell to you, but they can still call themselves fiduciaries. So this is something that I think most true fiduciaries have not quite woken up to, that they not only have to present themselves as fiduciaries, but they have to be very clear of what not having a conflict of interest means when someone advertises themselves as fiduciaries.
Yeah, you've just raised something that I want to take just a minute to tell our audience of advisors a little about the fact that the Institute for the Fiduciary Standard back in 2015 spent a number of months working with financial advisors who are fiduciaries to define what standards of behavior are appropriate for a real fiduciary. In other words, somebody who does take their best interest practice for investors seriously. What do they do day to day in their business? And there are 12 practices. As you mentioned, Jane, there are advisors who have attested to these practices and are now on a list of fiduciary advisors from the Institute. So I urge some of the advisors on the line to go and take a look at that list, because I think this whole notion of true and fake fiduciaries, we haven't even seen the tip of the iceberg yet on this.
And I think the advisors themselves are going to be astonished when they go out and say, well, I'm a fiduciary, and that's going to be great. I'm going to advertise myself as that, and discover that they are in competition with people who aren't really what we would call duty of loyalty and care fiduciaries, but can still advertise themselves as that. So they're going to have to make, Terry's suggestion, going on and taking the Facebook ads or going on TV or whatever, you not only say fiduciaries, you say, I have no conflicts of interest. I don't take commissions. I'm not going to sell you products that I have an interest in or my firm has an interest in. So you've got to go even deeper than you realize when you're advertising yourself as a true fiduciary. These waters are muddied, and this is going to be people don't understand fiduciary as it is. And then when you try telling them, well, there are fake fiduciaries out there, they say, what?
Yeah.
You know, you're up against a huge financial services industry. That brands itself, that tries to brand itself as in your interest, in the client's interest. And they spend a fortune every year on brand advertising, all the major financial services firms. But the fact of the matter is that a lot of the revenues come from selling products, selling services, and now from putting fees on things that really don't deserve to have fees put on them, so that they can now create this new aura of concern for the consumer. So it'll be very hard, I agree, Jane, to distinguish yourself. And that is why Jane and I are going to be very busy writing about these things for a long time. We'll hope we'll help the consumers find the good people out there. I mean, first of all, I would have to say there's nothing wrong with paying a fee or a commission if you're getting good advice. It's
right.
Not about fees or commissions. It's about integrity.
Right.
But, you know, even it's very, very hard when you are making a living with fees and commission or with commissions and you know, bonuses for selling certain products. You know, you may have a lot of integrity, but you have to keep your job, and you have to keep your job. The brokerage firm says you have to sell a certain amount and or you have to sell certain types of products. And it becomes very difficult for people, even for people of integrity, to be a truly disinterested advisor when it comes to their clients. I hate to say that, but in fact, that's
yep,
true.
Couldn't agree more. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let me jump in here and ask folks to email questions to info@campaignforinvestors.org. And also you'll be able to find an audio recording of today's conversation in the blog area at campaignforinvestors.org. I was going to ask you about this term fiduciary and the fact that, you know, like 5 years ago, you asked 3 in 5, 10 investors what they know about the word and they don't know anything. But today it seems like it's part of the vernacular. Is that your sense, or are we still struggling to help investors understand what it is and what it means?
Well, yes, sadly. I mean, yes, we think we've written about it. We think that way. But sadly, there are just so many people who never pay attention or paid attention in the past that doesn't even ring the bell. The word fiduciary, the concept that there are people out there selling brand names that also have potential for conflicts of interest in recommending the products or services. So, I mean, there'll never be a time when we can educate everyone, and yet we have required just about everyone to plan for their own retirement using products that require them to make decisions. It's a pretty sad story. I think, Jane, you'd agree we've both spent our lifetime trying to help people be better informed about those things, but we cannot ignore the fact that there are a lot of salespeople out there, and there are a lot of suckers who are just don't get it, don't know, and they're naive. It's very sad. That's why we're happy to talk to you all.
Oh, actually, that's true. Sometimes I tell people that I think my life has been wasted because I've spent my life writing about these things, and people are still doing unbelievable things because they just simply didn't understand. But here again, this comes to the question of how an advisor is going to define fiduciary to make it clear. Because, you know, we say, well, I'm a fiduciary because I put your interests ahead of mine. Well, any broker can tell you that. I put you first. You're my client. I put you first. That's what everybody will tell you. So there needs to be some kind of, I guess I would call it negative advertising, saying putting your interests first means I don't take commissions. putting your interest first means I'm not given a bonus for selling certain types of products. It means I don't have to sell proprietary products for my firm. Because otherwise, everybody is suddenly, first, aside from the fake fiduciaries who are using that name legally, unfortunately, because the SEC doesn't mind it, there are the people who are brokers who say, I've put your interest first. And how are people to understand that? And somehow there's going to be some clarity as to how you explain this to people and say, everyone who says, I put your interest first is not a fiduciary.
Right. One of the things that puts investors at a disadvantage, I think, in their relationship with an advisor is the lack of transparency around fees and costs. Now, I know that a fee-only advisor is going to say, I charge, 1% to 0.5%, whatever, of your investment balances. But there are so many other costs, even with a fee-only advisor, embedded in the mutual funds, the ETFs, the other investments that are there. This lack of transparency, it seems to me, keeping costs hidden, it just wouldn't be tolerated in any other profession. Can you imagine a lawyer or an architect saying, well, we're just going to build your house and you'll have to pay whatever it costs? Terry, how do you think this affects investors and what do you think they should do about it?
Well, that's interesting when you said it wouldn't be tolerated, this lack of transparency in any other profession. It has been tolerated, and it's to much to the detriment of efficiency for instance, in the medical industry. I mean, if people had to understood the cost of and didn't have insurance or Medicare or something to pay for it, and if your doctor said, well, you really need an MRI, go downstairs to my office. You might think about going on the Internet and finding XYZ MRI office a few blocks away that was advertising a very less expensive MRI with the same equipment. But because we haven't talked about that in the medical industry, because people have no incentive to understand because somebody else is paying, we get lots of inefficiencies and rising prices in general, in medical services. Well, if you translate that to the financial services industry, there are a lot of people who think that if there's not a commission in the box on a confirmation that people receive, a transaction confirmation, that the broker didn't make any money. But they don't know the difference between principal and agency. Or that if you put $10,000 in this product, they don't know that $400, $500, $600 off the top goes to the firms, what's with a broker or a sales agent, and that money isn't working for you. So first thing the industry, but not the ones that are running the show because their incentive is to keep all that profit, but first thing advisors like you and financial writers like us have to do is say, would it be a great campaign? I'll beat you to it maybe. What's the percent commission you think you pay on this? Life insurance, an annuity, a mutual fund? Buying 100 shares of Amazon stock, we got close to it when the internet brokers started competing based on, $7.95 a trade kind of a thing. But nowhere else have we seen that transparency that you spoke about, Mary.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something, of course, where we hope that the true fiduciaries can compete by saying, here are my fees. And I think the fiduciaries, or if you're doing a percentage of assets and you say 1%, but you're not also disclosing that there are other costs in trades or spreads or depending on what you're doing, I think that maybe you're not fully disclosing the way that you should and whatever the fees are, to warn people there are spreads. I mean, in my experience, most fee-only planners do their very best to find low-cost products. But nevertheless, that's a line, that's a paragraph in a disclosure that could be on a website just to alert people. And basically, you find that people are, for some reason, afraid to ask what it costs. And if it doesn't, we Americans are used to having things with tickets on them. You know, you can pick up something and it says what it costs. And if we are asked to bargain, we're very often not very good at it. You know, someone will say, oh, this costs $20, but there's no ticket. And, you know, I've seen people from other countries come in and say, well, I'll give you 15 for it, and it sells, because they're used to the idea of bargaining. We are not. And we're not used to asking somebody what the price is, because we're used to seeing it on a tag. And to say, how much are you charging? How much, what does this cost? Give it to me in writing. And again, this is what the fee-only planners will do. They'll give it to you in writing, and so you know it's true. Unfortunately, when you don't get it in writing from brokers or insurance agents or, what am I paying for this? What am I paying for this fixed indexed annuity? Oh, they can say it's free. The company pays. You don't pay. You know, I think it's outrageous that this is possible. But this is a way, you think of competing, of saying, I will tell you what all your costs are. There are no hidden costs. And other people do have hidden costs.
Yeah. Well, just a little resource for investors here is that the Campaign for Investors provides a tool on their website to help investors calculate investment costs on their entire portfolio, not just one security at a time. So just to keep that in mind, and that might be actually useful for the advisors to say to a prospective client, go calculate your cost and see what you're actually paying. So segue over a little bit to the Campaign for Investors, there's a lot of tools on there. Find out if your advisor has been, set up for, claim to be something illegal and so forth. Jane, you've endorsed the campaign. You mentioned the campaign frequently in your posts. What for you is unique about the Campaign for Investors resource there?
I think that to try to tell people what a fiduciary is, how important it is, why we are on this phone call, the Institute has done other webinars. This is critically important for investors so that they can get more from their money, so that maybe we can have fewer people leeching off retirement accounts and more people providing honest, disinterested advice for people. And this is what I and Terry, too, we've spent our lives writing about, to try to get disinterested advice and reasonable cost advice and honest advice to people who don't know anything. And, why should they know anything? They're teachers, they're engineers, they're lawyers, they're whatever. They know their jobs, they don't know investing. And why should they know investing? So they turn to people who know it as experts, and mostly they get let down. And the sad thing is that they so often don't know they've been let down because they cannot calculate their returns from investing very well. They just can't calculate them.
They have no idea.
They have no idea what they who buy individual stocks. In my talks, I sometimes say, you remember your winners, every one of them. You forget your losers. You never average them, the two of them together. So you have no idea how well you have done compared with the market as a whole. And almost certainly they have done a whole lot worse than the market as a whole, and they don't know it. And that's why it's kind of so easy, I think, for people who are not people of integrity to give investment advice.
Let's go back to the website for one second, Mary. I went to Philadelphia last year when the Fiduciary Institute was celebrating the DOL rule and the new Campaign for Investors website. I think it's such an important resource. And one of the best parts of the resource, which you good financial advisors, when you're talking to someone who's obviously going to check out several of them, can point to with pride, is that look at the resource, the links to the databases of disciplinary history. There are just far too many people out there with sad disciplinary histories that are still selling financial products for a different company. It's astounding how long they can go either unremoved from the industry, basically. That's the kind of a tool that every person who's thinking about getting an advisor wants to use, and I think you can recommend it. I always recommend it. My column runs now around the country. It's syndicated by the Tribune. And I think there's not one part of the country where people are not exposed to people selling products that have a long, sorted history, if only you, which now, in the olden days, you never knew. Someone moved from one part of the country to the other. Now you can see the disciplinary histories, and the links that Campaign for Investors really make that easy. So you wouldn't be listening here today if you weren't a really concerned financial advisor looking to expand your businesses and differentiate yourself. Point with pride to your background check on, and ask them to compare you to the other people they're thinking about.
Right. Very good advice, yeah. Let's drill down a little bit for the advisors that are on the call today. Let's talk about the advisor's website. What do you tell investors to look for or avoid? Terry, Jane, either one of you.
Sadly, there are great artists out there who manage to create beautiful, official, professional-looking websites, and most of the advisors, well, maybe they hire someone good to do their website, but I don't, and that's just the calling card today, as important maybe as your business card was in years ago. But I don't think that, I mean, I've never hoped that nobody makes an investment advisor decision based on the website. I really don't, because some of the biggest financial services firms have fantastic looking sites and they charge a lot of fees. That's what pays for the web development.
Mm-hmm. But you've got to have a website, and when I look at the websites of advisors I admire, they have a lot in common. First, they emphasize fiduciary and they explain what it means. They usually have the ADV form up, their advisory form that they give to clients that discloses their background and their investment philosophy and whether there are any violations, that sort of thing. The ADV form is there. There are paragraphs about, not in generalities, but quite specifically, how they think about investing. For example, they'll explain total return investing. They'll say something like, we don't do income portfolios because income isn't the point, total return is the point, and they will explain that. So I see a lot of, just in FAQs, explanations of very basic things that investors need to know when they are when they're looking at what an advisor does for them and to understand what an advisor does for them. And so, and these things can all be on the website. They can be there under FAQs. They can say we don't take commissions. They can say we strive for low costs. There are things where you can be completely transparent and explain yourself the same way you would explain yourself to somebody who is sitting in a chair in front of you saying, what do I do? That should be on the website along with the ADV and along with a very solid write-off explanation of, I am a fiduciary, and as a fiduciary, this is what I do. I'd also like to pick up on something that Terry said a little earlier, and that is so many people think of going to an investment advisor just for money management. I mean, the conversation with an advisor, how are my investments doing, is so 1980s. That's just in the past. Money management is practically a commodity these days. I mean, you can do it on computers in the back room. You can do it with robo-advisors. There are index funds, which I love. What is the value added that you pay for an advisor? That is the planning function. And your advisor should not only be an RIA and fiduciary, an advisor should also be a CFP. You should be a planner. And the forward advisory firms today are the ones that handle all of these other questions of your personal life. How much do I need to save? What about health expenses when I'm older? When should I start Social Security? What should I do about leaving a legacy? What about college planning? All of these, or I'm getting divorced, now what? All of these kinds of questions that affect your personal life so strongly need to be part of a good planner's portfolio. So the money management, although obviously it's important, when you go to somebody for advice, these other things are the value added. You can pay, you know, 0.25% for money management in Vanguard or Charles Schwab or index fund or whatever. But if you're going to pay 1%, you have all these other things too.
Yeah, very good point. We always had, when I was in business, we always had a little trouble trying to help our clients distinguish between the money management and the value of the planning and really see it as one entire package. One of the questions that I have is what do investors want to say to advisors? What do they want to say?
They just want to shout out help. No, they want to say, can I trust you? That's the question.
Yeah.
That's the question in back of anybody's mind who's talking to someone who might be their advisor. Can I trust you? How do I know I can trust you? And that's a very difficult question. I know Terry and I have both. People always say, how do I find an investor I can trust?
Yep.
We've both broken our heads trying to write a column answering that question because it's a very difficult question to answer. And the more transparent you are about costs and what you do and how you do it, the better the trust function will be. And something else, and that is, I think that investors should always ask a presumptive advisor, someone who you're going to when you're looking at two or three people who should manage my money, ask for the names of three or four of their clients who are willing to talk. And a lot of time investors say, well, you know, all they'll do is give me people who will say good things about them. Well, presumably, but I've found it quite remarkable. You call up a client of XYZ Investor saying, I'm thinking of going there. They gave me your name. What do you think? And they'll very often give you pros and cons. So I think advisors should be very willing to give names of people who are obviously willing to take on this a job of talking to prospective clients and say, okay, go and talk to them. And that's another very big thing, I think, that will help trust.
Mm-hmm. Now, very important, though, that if you get a reference from an advisor, and sometimes you'll hear, oh, well, this advisor manages the Smith family fortune. The question is, are you talking with that individual advisor, that well-known head of the firm who is managing the same Smith family fortune made on the Internet? Who will you be talking to? I think the most important things that you can convince investors of or potential clients of is that they came for you. They want to know that you're paying attention to them. Of course, you have people that handle the technical details and the bookkeeping details and maybe some of the other communication details. But I think clients want to know, number one, that they're getting the person that they came to the firm for, that you have a terrific staff that you're in communication with all the time. After all, if you're a successful advisor, you do get a vacation. But the fact is that people believe you're on top of their personal situation, that your associates or assistants are people that they can easily access and also trust. That is a great reassurance because in addition to making the plan, not just the investment plan, but the whole financial plan, the greatest role of an advisor, I think, is keeping people disciplined to stick to the plan. And that requires a lot of communication and trust. That's the most important thing I think people want to know, that you're there for them.
Right, right. And just the flip side of that question, I think, is what do investors not want to hear from advisors?
Well, I hope they don't want to hear an advisor saying, I can beat the market. I'm afraid too many investors are very attracted by an advisor who says, I can beat the market, and they say, okay, here's my money. I mean, that's almost universally a false statement, right?
And, so, and what should it, what should an invest an advisor do when they have a prospective client sitting in front of them who says, "Tell me what your return was last year"?
That's a tough question for an advisor to answer. And what an advisor, I hope, would answer is there are many things involved. First, obviously, every portfolio is different. Who's going to have a return each year? But I hope that the advisor is selling the planning part of it and not trying to sell you on beating the market. And if you have a client, I've had people who've said to me, well, you know, I'm looking for someone, you know, I'm sure Terry is the same thing, you know, the doctor is always in. People want to tell you, ask you questions or where they can find an advisor or this or that. And I've had people say to me, how do they beat the market? You know, what are the returns? And I say, you know, I don't have an advisor for you. That's not the way I think. And the advisors I respect, that's not the way they think.
You know, you'll do fine just beating the market. You really don't have to beat the market over the long run if you have a disciplined plan. You know, you all know this. You've seen the Ibbotson graphics, the average annual return. That's not this year or next year or last year guaranteed. But over the long run, you don't have to beat the market. You just have to make sure you are there and you don't get scared out when the market is crashing and you don't get doubling up when the market is in obvious bubbles. That's a big role of the advisor. And I would look askance on a client who wanted me to beat the market because we all know that over the long run, that's just a big matter of chance, not a portfolio.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, Terry, because and Jane, your comments too, because as an advisor, having been at this for a long time, I think there are certain clients that you have to say, I'm sorry, we're just not going to work well together. You want something that's not appropriate. The second thing that I would say here is, or you're focused on something that's not appropriate. The second thing I would say is I hope that the two of you will spend time teaching investors about this notion of the long haul and just getting the market, Terry. That's a very appropriate comment. Just getting in there and staying in there. Because we all know that pulling things out at the wrong time is you have to make two decisions, not one. So let me just
Three easily, when to get out, when to get back in again, and then when to get out. That's a tough thing to be right at all the time.
Right.
No one is right at that all the time. It's just it's a waste of time to try, and you lose money when you're doing it.
No. Just a reminder to everybody, we're taking questions at info@campaignforinvestors.org, and the recording will be on that site in the blog area probably later today or early tomorrow. With the Internet, advisors are working with clients all over the country. Terry, are you hearing from investors that they want to work remotely, that they are afraid to do that? Do they trust that? What can advisors do to be in that space with clients?
That is a very interesting question, Mary. I don't have a personal answer for you. I tend to think that even though you could probably go on a website and we will have second opinions offered from doctors at the Mayo Clinic, even if you're in North Carolina, so to speak. I think that medicine and money are two areas where, at least at the most basic level, people still want to be in touch. Now, maybe that reflects my generation and maybe not the younger generation that will think everything is in bits and bytes on the Internet. But by the time you're talking with people who have accumulated some wealth, and their wealth is to them the most important thing, it's just their 401k, their home, some other savings they may have had, I think they really want a hands-on experience. At least once in a while, they know that on the day the market's down a couple hundred points, you're not going to be accessible to everyone. But they'd like to know who you are and touch you, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I agree that people, especially as soon as they have a certain amount of money, are going to want at least once to sit down with someone rather than have the entire transaction from, or the entire experience, I should say, from start to finish be web only. Even if every other meeting is on the, you know, go to meeting or you're Skyping it or you're FaceTiming it or whatever, that at least that first time where you walk around the office and you meet people and you discuss things, I think it's very much hands-on. However, that is, I think, for the planning part of it. When you look at these robo-advisors that have come up, I think that the younger people who are not interested in the planning part, even though perhaps they should be, but they're not, they're much more likely to be interested in just how can I make it really easy to invest my money at a low cost and I don't have to think about it. I think that they appear to be willing to work purely on a robo advisor and just putting the money in and seeing how it goes. But the more you get and the older you get, I think the more you want that hands-on.
Right. Let's go over to the questions if you can spare a few more minutes with us today. One question that's come in, some investors are asking, quote, do I really need an advisor? How would you answer that?
I do think that you need an advisor when we are getting into the planning issues. Now, if you are younger and you're building up your money and you don't have a lot to spend and what you want to do is set up an index fund and put the money in it regularly the way you put money into a 401k, I don't think you need an advisor for that. But what, and I don't think, and I don't, as we've said in this discussion, an advisor that only manages money, I don't think is value added anymore. I think you absolutely need an advisor as soon as you start thinking, I need to set goals, I need to understand where I'm going, I need to understand how my money is going to support my life in the future, my future self. That is what an advisor brings to you, value added.
Mm-hmm. People don't know what they don't know. And so when you ask if people, most people think they would love someone to come in and take over all their finances. I mean, paying their bills. There are an awful lot of people that would just be very grateful if you would provide the most basic services in life. They're willing to admit, I'm not good at money. If I had, you, Jane, you and I, if we each had a dollar for every time someone said to us, well, I'm not very good with money. Yeah. There are a lot of people that want help. They just don't know what they don't know. They don't know what it should cost. They don't really understand what the benefits would be over the long run. Sad to say, when you're an advisor in a business, you typically tend to get them when they've accumulated some money and have to make some decisions, and hopefully they've found you a good advisor. The best thing you can do to contribute to the chain of success is to grab their kids while they're teenagers and in their early 20s. These successful older clients of yours or their grandchildren, and get them some way involved in doing a little side financial planning for them. Just show them how to open a Roth IRA if they've had a job, or how grandparents can match their contribution if they had a summer job, or make the contribution. Because once you get people hooked at a young age, they'll understand the benefits that you bring to them.
Great. Those are great answers. Another question here, what do you think are the most important factors for someone when they're deciding to hire a financial advisor? What are the pieces that you've touched on some of them during the call today, but let's sort of summarize for the listeners. The most important factors.
You know, a great deal is said about, do you feel comfortable with that person? And I think that that is certainly important. My concern is that you can feel very comfortable with a con man, too. So the comfort aspect is important. But I think that putting forth who you are, that you're a fiduciary, what you do for people, that you, what your costs are, that what your philosophy is, if you strive for low cost, that you don't have conflicts of interest. I mean, these, I think, are the things that the advisor needs to put forward, and I think these are the things that the investor has to go through. And I think those are very important things to get answers for. And then at the end of that, of course, you need to feel comfortable with this person. But the comfort factor is essential, but it comes after you go through all of this other analysis of what this person is actually doing. Because if you start out with, oh, I feel comfortable with this person, you know, where do I sign? That's not the way to pick a good advisor. And maybe there are some advisors who would love that to have happened, but I think a good advisor does not. A good advisor wants the person to be fully informed of what all of these factors are. You know, the ADV, what's in it, what does it say, what do people know, how do you manage their money, and is that what they want?
Right. Good point. We're about to wrap up. Do either of you have any thoughts for advisors related to the investor? Just anything off the top of your head that
Jane, I'm going to let you have the last word and just make one statement. Those of you who cared enough to join in today, thank you. We see the sad stories, too many sad stories. We not only write and send it out there, but both of us through our people contact us. We see and hear the sad stories of what happens when the wrong people get a hold of vulnerable and gullible and just bewildered individuals. So thank you, and don't think that only that you're not appreciated. And the more you can encourage other people of like mind to speak up and say, as Jane pointed out, we're fiduciaries, this is what it really means, so the more you're doing for the world. There's just more and more people that need your advice, and we hope you win. We really do hope you're the ones they go to.
And I hope that more people will be training as financial advisors and as financial planners. I think there's a shortage of good people, and I think that so we need more training, we need more schools. You know, there are some good schools that are setting up and that are expanding. I'm also hoping that we will attract, you know, by we I mean those of us who believe in fiduciary standard and no conflicts of interest and that sort of thing, that we'll attract people who are working in the financial industry and have been commission players, and they themselves have seen that this is not good for their clients. And after a certain time, they say, you know, I just can't do this anymore. And it's difficult to transition from a commission-based business to a fee-only-based business. And so some people are afraid to do it. They're afraid to make the leap. But I think a rising number of people are saying, I'm going to be better off in a fee-only business or a fee-based business without conflicts, and trying to make that move. And the more people we can get out of the old industry and into the new industry, the happier I'll be.
Then you can retire. Great. Just a reminder to everyone that the Institute for the Fiduciary Standard has developed 12 best practices for fiduciary advisors. There's an opportunity to sign on to them, to let investors know that you support and practice in this way. So I encourage you to visit thefiduciaryinstitute.org. Thefiduciaryinstitute.org. Before we sign off, just remember that you can find an audio recording of today's conversation in the blog area at campaignforinvestors.org. Advisors, linking to the campaign site is a terrific way to signal to prospective clients that you support them in their search for fiduciary advice, show them what it means to be interested in working in their best interests. That's all I have for today, and I'd like to thank you both, Jane Brian Quinn and Terry Savage, for your time and Your comments were extremely helpful. I learned a lot, and thanks today to our listeners. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Great. Thanks. I'll conclude the webinar.